the EFL. It's the Football League podcast, bringing the back-to-school vibes, but built on more solid foundations than your average British classroom. Coming up, Surrey Saints slapped at Sunderland, Warnock wins at West Brom, whinges anyway, we scout the sharpest signings, salute the surprise packages of League One, and more. Powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. What a weekend it was. Goals galore, surprises, upsets, typical Football League stuff, basically. We're here to talk through the best bits. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams. I'm joined by my two regulars. Hello, Sam Parkin.
Hello, Matt. Hello, Clarkey.
Yes, that's Adrian Clark, the aforementioned.
Yeah, good to see you. What a great morning it is. Had a lovely weekend.
Yeah, same. Even though I had 25-year-old children ransacking my house all day yesterday. Apologies if I'm a little croaky because of that, listener. We're going to get into all sorts today. As I say, we got transfers, we got weekend reviews, we got another managerial sacking. Before we get to that, how about this? The guys at Quinbet, our sponsors, have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers. Sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Right, we're going to talk about a sacking first of all today.
We were led you from Celtic. Scotty Brown, what a player he was, by the way. All the Celtic fans were going, whoa, Scotty's out. Manager of Fleetwood Town, back to pre-season now. Now, Scott, don't show your players this video. Please don't show this video.
100%.
But,
mate, come on, you.
Right, here we go. A little, no Jägermeister here, so we can have a lemoncello. There's not a lot of beer in there, though. I thought these Scottish people would drink. My God. Anyway, Scott.
I'm Brazil.
Lovely to meet you, and good luck with Fleetwood Town. So we're here for Jim Irvine tomorrow night. He's in the Rockwell Place, JK. All the best, everyone. Have a good weekend.
Well, when you dance with the devil, you have to be aware that eventually the music will stop. Similarly, if you drink Peroni and limoncello mixed together with Ray Parlour during pre-season, you're on shaky grounds managerially. That old adage proved true for Scott Brown, who we heard there alongside Clarkey's old teammate. Brown looked confused in the video, and it seems that he was a bit on the touchline as well. He's been biffed by Fleetwood. They picked up just 1 point from their opening six games. There's two ways to go at this, Clarkey. You can either talk to me about Scott Brown and the fact that he's only 38 and what happens next for him in management, or you can try and sell Fleetwood as an attractive proposition to me. Bear in mind that their owner was jailed for 13 years for fraud in July. I looked up who their new owners was. There's a statement on the website that simply says, Fleetwood Wanderers Limited, TA Fleetwood Town Football Club, is a member of the English Football League and the Football Association. It is majority owned by JML Limited. Shareholders owning 75% or more of shares are JML Limited. 97%. What I'm trying to get at here is it doesn't seem a particularly stable club to me. Is it an attractive proposition? And is that part of the reason why Scott Brown floundered this season?
He's definitely less of an attractive proposition at the moment, isn't it? I don't know anything about this ownership issue. It doesn't feel like it's a club on an upward trajectory. It feels like they're sort of treading water a little bit. But for Scott Brown, I just think always the first job is the most important. And many that lose their jobs early never come back into football as a number one. Now, I think Scott Brown will be different. I think he'll get a job north of the border. He's a bit of a legend in Scotland. But I think that's him done in the EFL for now. And he's got to go and prove himself up in his homeland, I would imagine. I've got to be honest, I thought last season they were quite a well-coached team. They were very well organised, hard to score against. And I thought they could kick on. If they could just find a little bit more punch and they've signed some good forward players this summer, then maybe they'd be okay. But no, it's been very flat. They've lost a lot of games narrowly. They've not been hammered. They're not a team in absolute disarray. But they're not a team that looks like doing anything this season either. And that's why I think he's lost his job. It might be premature. It's certainly damaging to his career prospects. But I'm sure he'll return in Scotland sometime soon.
Matt Lawler is taking charge of Tuesday's EFL Trophy game against Tranmere. I had a look, Sam, before we came on air. Carl Robinson is the odds-on favourite for this job. Is he going to want it? He's got to be aiming a little bit higher than that, has he? Or is it just the fact that it's relatively local to the area that he's from means that he's a contender?
Imagine a bit of everything. I would be surprised. Carl Robinson was to take that. I've obviously championed him for bigger jobs in the in the past since he's been out of work. And obviously he went in with Sam Allardyce, didn't he, at Leeds. So I would be surprised. And I am surprised about the sacking, because I saw Fleetwood a couple of times last year and I was impressed with the setup of the team, Scott Brown's coaching. They lost, obviously, Lewis Warrington, who's on loan at Plymouth now, holding midfield player, who was kind of the fulcrum of that team. So I don't know if that's had an impact. Obviously, scoring goals has been a big problem at the start of this season. Lack of creativity, despite those good forward options that Clarkey mentioned there. I think Marriott stuck around after interesting him. Stockley got a goal at the weekend. So that could turn. But 1 point from opening day, lack of goals, poor win ratio. That's obviously meant the end of him. But yeah, I was relatively impressed with him. So, you know, when I saw them live last year, so... Yeah, I'm disappointed to see him go. Hibs vacancy is open, isn't it, north of the border?
What's your take on Limoncello, chaps? I mean, it seems that Limoncello's going into every drink these days. I had to order one for Mrs. Clark the other day, Limoncello Spritz. Absolutely minging. She passed it on to me. She was like, no, I can't drink it. It's horrendous.
It's only accepted if it's offered and the only thing available at the end of a meal in a trattoria, right?
Yeah, I was just going to say, you have to be an amaretto or eating Italian food for limoncello ever to be.
Normally I say, can it be changed for an amaretto if they're giving a freebie out? Like, I reluctantly take the limoncello on, but I'll have one.
Amaretto, but yeah, wins all day long, doesn't it? Yeah.
Well, look, Scott Brown can get back on the Buckfast as he probably takes, I don't know what, Celtic under-21s, then Queen of the South, then comes back to Exeter. Good luck to him on that proposed career path. We're going to get into the weekend's action next, and we'll start in the Championship. Right, Southampton to Sunderland is a 640-mile, 10.5-hour round trip. It was a 12:30 kickoff at the Stadium of Light. Final score, Sunderland 5, Southampton 0. The Saints' official account tweeted after the match, to all 1,541 of you who travelled today, thank you, heart emoji. Somebody called Charlie Adams, not Charlie Adam, replied, no worries, thank you for ruining everything. Admin should probably have stayed quiet, Clarkey. This one was all over by half time.
On the kickoff time is just ludicrous, isn't it? That shouldn't be allowed. That genuinely shouldn't be allowed to have two teams that far apart playing in an early kickoff. It's unfair, not cool at all. But it was a really cool performance from Sunderland. Blimey, they have this in their locker, don't they? They have some very, very exciting young players, some skillful players that are hungry to impress. You've got to put this result into context. Sunderland have just seen their main man, really, even though he's injured at the moment, Ross Stewart, sold to Southampton. They've seen a whole host of their other players go in this window, and they managed to cling on to a couple as well. But this was not an easy few weeks for Tony Mowbray and the Sunderland squad. So for them to produce this performance was sensational. Pierre Ekwa, just magnificent inside the centre of the engine room alongside Dan Neil. Two young, talented, fast developing players that have quickly become the sort of fulcrum of this Sunderland team. They were magnificent in this game. And obviously Ekwa gets a couple of goals. Second one was a real beauty. But when you've got guys like Jack Clark and Barr on the right-hand side that can travel with the ball at pace and hurt opposition teams, it doesn't half help. And yeah, I think, look, they did what every team wants to do against Southampton. They stayed organised, didn't panic by not having the ball. And then at the right times, they got aggressive, produced those turnovers, and then made them pay. The little of the ball they had, they really did make good use of it. And yeah, I do like Jack Clark. I think Jack Clark's got potential to really get back up to the top in terms of being a Premier League player again. Obviously, he had a little dabble there and it didn't work out for him. Things conspired against him, but he is rebuilding his career quite impressively, Jack Clark. And I thought he was really, really strong in this match as well. I was looking at the numbers, 12 chance creating ball carries this season. So he travels with it brilliantly, gets his shots away or lays on chances for others. So yeah, brilliant from Sunderland. Southampton just... so open when they concede possession. Whenever they lost it, just wide open gaps. Really poor, quite concerning. And a debut to forget for Mason Holgate, kind of partially to blame for a couple of the goals, then gets hooked just after the hour. fans are on his case already. It's a little bit like Kai Havertz, probably a little bit worse for Mason Holgate. So I hope things pick up for him. I think they will. I think Southampton will be all right. But yeah, they were, the structure of that team when they lost the ball was poor. Too many players ahead of the ball.
Sam, last week we talked about the worst goal you've ever scored. You've got some beef with a piece of skill in this match that people appreciated and you did not.
I want Clarkie to have the floor because he brought it to my attention again. Who was the player, Clarkie, and what was he doing? What on earth
Bennett,
was he doing?
The 19-year-old sub Bennett came on. He basically did, what was the name for it? I just call it a 360 where you put
It gets given to Maradona, doesn't it?
The Maradona where you put one foot on the ball, then you pirouette and you do a 360. It's quite an easy piece of skill. I'll tell you why it's easy. Because my son Ted, who's 5, can nail it. Absolutely, it's not an issue for him. So it isn't hard. But he did 3 in a row, which was proper showboating. But in fairness, the cross that he then put in for Chris Rigg, who became Sunderland's youngest ever league goal scorer, 16 years of age, great header, but a brilliant cross. I think the fact that he produced such a worldy cross at the end of it, Sam, means that triple show-off bit was fine with me.
Well, it's basically the easiest skill in the world, if that's the thing. And it was just Mickey taking. And Russell Martin drew attention to it after the game, basically, didn't he? It was given an assessment, but I think that encapsulated the lack of fight from his team. And he made a point of referencing that nobody even kicked him. Someone did try and kick him, but it was a bit half-hearted. Normally you get absolutely smashed there, don't you, when someone's doing that last knock-ins of the game. But you're right with the delivery. And Chris Rigg, what a name for a striker. He's going to be putting it in the rigging throughout his career. So that was a lovely moment for him, 16 years old. But yeah, it's a nothing bit of skill. Even I could do that.
I couldn't. Arguably, the shock of the weekend in the Championship came at the New York Stadium, where Rotherham earned their first W of the season. They beat in-form Norwich 2-1. Dexter Lembekisa got the pick of the goals. He's got a lovely soft voice too. Listen to it now.
Yeah, man. Obviously, the play started, I remember saying, be switched on to the second balls, and then luckily it came on to me and I hit, and it went into the top right. So, it's always nice to score, but the main thing is we got the win.
Your classic, anyone could beat anyone in this division kind of game. This, Sam, was it?
Yeah, probably. Although I think Rotherham have maybe been a little bit unfortunate in some of their games. And I'd love to come up with something sophisticated and data-driven here. But I think the continuity of the selection, a lot of new players getting the opportunity to play a lot of minutes together. The midfield chemistry, Rathbone, Nihi, who we had mentioned on the show last week, and Cafu. He's kind of taken that Dan Barlassa mantle, good on the ball, range of passing. So I think that's really good. Teehee has a ball winner in there, natural ball winner. He's been excellent as well. Front three is exciting. This has passed me by a little bit. Onyedimra on one side, Andre Green, who I think has been plying his trade in Slovakia, if memory serves me right. Really high pedigree young player at Aston Villa. And also, we've had Matt Taylor on the podcast before, and I think he's quite a forward-thinking manager. I think this is a Rotherham team that's trying to have a little bit more of the ball. The line's a bit higher. Their back line, they definitely got after Norwich, put them under pressure when they were playing out. And I think it's probably due to the mobility he's got in the side now, especially the two central defenders, Blackett, Taylor and Humphreys. Humphreys particularly good on the ball, actually. But I think they've got good pace across the back line. That's not something I would have always associated with Rotherham. You'd expect them to have at least one who's a bit deeper and a fighter, a la Richard Wood. So it's a bit of a different style. He normally evolves, Matt Taylor. He's brought in Sam Nombe as well from Exeter. I think they've paid 2 record fees in this window. So he strengthened them in attack. Jordan Hugel scoring against his former team. So it's a really good day. I do still think sometimes the timing of the goals really help, because they've been in the ascendancy in some games and maybe not got the rewards, even though I know they were paid back against Blackburn at home earlier in the season. But I think going 2 up, yes, conceding, but this time able to hold on, and Norwich just a little bit loose maybe, and not as clinical as they have been, even though Jonathan Rowe supplied an assist for yet another goal. So an off day for them. Obviously brought in Hwang to replace Josh Sargent in the last few days. Danny Bart as well coming in to reinforce the defence. So wouldn't be too worried about Norwich, but probably a result that's been coming for Rotherham and really pleased for him.
All right. Well, we mentioned X Factor's working for Rotherham. Alex Neil was left scorned by his old love as Preston won 2-0 at Neil's current club, Stoke. Will was keen to send Preston top. His second half breaks, making it 4 wins in a row for PNE. So, Clark, are you ready to bestow dark horse status upon North End yet?
Maybe. I still have the same reservations about their firepower in terms of finishing inside the top six. But if they continue to defend as, you know, as well as they have with as much organisation, and obviously Emil Reese comes back in and starts to fire the goals again, then maybe they could be dark horses. They've certainly started better than I thought they would. This was a win, not born out of revenge, but there was an edge to it because of Alex Neil being former Preston, Paul Gallagher, Daniel Johnson, Ben Pearson, all involved for Stoke on the day. And I think they got pelters. I think the fans for PNE were coming after them, basically. They sung their names and asked them what the score was non-stop for periods of that second half. But yeah, they're a team that don't need much of the ball. Preston, they're happy to back themselves shape-wise. And to then pick teams off and deliver when opportunities arise. And that's what they did. I think Ryan Lowe in this game played a bit of a blinder. He took off the Scandinavian player, Mads Frankja, I think it's called. And he came off at halftime for Dwayne Holmes. And Dwayne Holmes just gave that little bit more spark and zip and penetration. And that was enough, really, to hurt Stoke City in the second half. Obviously, Will Keane got himself a brace. So yeah, really good result and flown under the radar. We haven't really talked about them so far this season, Preston, but terrific results. 4 straight wins now and a draw on the opening day. They've only conceded 3 goals and their expected goals against in open play is the best in the division. So basically teams are carving them open the least number of times in the Championship, which I think is very, very impressive. Just 5 games, 2.56 expected goals against in open play. That's phenomenal. So yeah, well done Preston here. It was a good team performance, and that's their chance, because they're not a team of individuals. It's going to be the team ethic that keeps them there or thereabouts, and they do seem together. Ryan Lowe is a smart guy, fosters good team spirit. Mike Marsh is there, the assistant, played with him at Southend. Great lad, sensational character, really. Great on a night out. I think that will be a happy camp, Preston, certainly this week.
Yeah, just 1 shot on target for Stoke. And I think Freddie Woodman's just faced 8 now, 8 shots on his goal. So he's not busy. And that's obviously down to that back 3, that back 5. And yeah, Hughes winning at left wing back here. He's been part of that brilliant back 3 throughout the last couple of seasons. He's gone left wing back. Watmore's come in. That's a really good replacement. So they're going to be so watertight defensively. And with Clarkey, they have made signings. They brought in a striker. Emil Reese is yet to come back. So I don't know. It's a good 11. It's a good 11. Whether they've got the depth to go the whole hog, we'll have to wait and see. But brilliant start to the season. And again, tougher test ahead because it's been, on paper, quite a nice start for him. So I think we'll have to give him a few more weeks and months.
As for Stoke, Alex Neil pointed to the turnover in their squad. He said, "It was Wouter Bugger's first league game, Lerus's first league game, Gucci's first minutes on the pitch for the club, Juno's first minutes and Jorgic's first minutes in the league. There's huge amounts of change. A lot of churn within the squad." Fair enough, Alex. I'm not going to question you because I'm scared of you. A win that was very much of the much-needed variety for Huddersfield, meanwhile, and Neil Warnock, as they upset the form book to earn a 2-1 success at West Brom. Here's Warnock describing the feeling of winning and having a totally unnecessary pop at the referee.
Oh, what a jubilation, really. Because this season we've had so many kicks in the teeth, haven't we? So I was pleased. I was really pleased. I thought we put we counter-attacked very well today. We could have had 2 or 3 goals. Disappointed with a disallowed goal, if I'm honest. I don't think that's a push too severe, anyhow, put it that way. And I asked him at half-time as we were coming up, would he give a penalty if he saw that shove in the box? And he said no.
Sam, Jack Radoni's winner coming in the 6th minute of stoppage time. Is that the kind of thing that can turn a season?
Yeah, I think so. You could basically just replay what I said about Rotherham here, I think. But I think a few more tactical adjustments, probably. Credit Neil Warnock. 4 changes. in terms of players. Went to 3-5-2 with Kasumu and Headley, the wing backs. I think just defending properly, cutting out the individual errors, staying in the game, and that's got to be the blueprint for Huddersfield, because they're not going to score mountains of goals. They didn't get the striker over the line that the supporters were craving, so that remains an issue. But defensively, they've been so poor, so uncharacteristically poor. This was a huge improvement, and they have signed someone. Bergzog got the first goal, a really well-taken goal. Mm. Ben Wiles was straight in as well. He'll be a game changer. It was a move a long time in the coming, a long time in the offing for Ben Wiles. I think he's been a standout, stellar player for Rotherham for a number of seasons. So he's a really good capture. But I think, you know, collectively, this was an excellent display. They had to work hard, get it late. I think Alex Palmer won't want to see Jack Redoni's goal again. I think he probably could have done better, although Redoni had one chalked off earlier in the game that maybe could have counted. But no, it was a good performance. And I think that Huddersfield's point tally doesn't really reflect their start to the season. Again, they've been in quite a few games and been quite unfortunate. West Brom, Carlos Corberan changing the shape after that Middlesbrough victory, where they played a back three. He was back to a 4-2-3-1 here. I think the fullbacks have been poor this season. A little bit of a weak link. So going back to those two, Townsend and Furlong, not sure they were reinstated for this game. Phillips had played in a wing-back role previously. He was higher up here. So, yeah, still wrestling a little bit with his shape. And, yeah, maybe just the lack of real transfer activity is going to cost them a real tilt-hitter this season. They still look a little bit short. Be surprised if Sarmiento doesn't maybe get a run after his goal off the bench against Middlesbrough. And he wasn't in from the start here. So 7 points from 9. And he goes and changes it quite drastically for this game, maybe on reflection. He'll regret those decisions.
Anything else in the Championship that stood out to us, Clarkie? I think we should probably let Sam talk about QPR winning at Middlesbrough. But elsewhere, we had what? Leicester losing at home to Hull, Bristol City's win at Swansea, thriller between Cov and Watford, Blackburn shipping 3 days after winning 8-0. There was plenty going on.
Yeah, I'll leave the floor for Sam to wax lyrical about the hoops and Andre Dizel, that's for sure. Leicester, 21 shots against Hull City. One on target. 12 went wide or over. 7 were blocked. 1 hit the post and 1 went gently into the goalkeeper's arms. I mean, yeah, it's lots of good football, lots of nice play, possibly lots more better play from Leicester City in the game, but no punch at all. Couple of other goals that really stood out. Van Erwijk of Coventry, the dip that he got in his free kick was just incredible. I don't know if it was one of those, what do they call it, where they sort of hit the valve and it dips over.
Yeah,
it was incredible. It sort of bounced before it reached the line. It had that much on it.
Knuckleball.
We saw the best disallowed goal ever, didn't we, from Millwall? The corner, deep corner to Ryan Leonard, who hits it on the volley from 25 yards out. It's an absolute screamer. And it flicks off the head of Cooper, who's offside, ruined it. Mark Sykes, I think from Bristol City, we talked about that game in last week's pod, didn't we? We said Bristol City would be favourites. And Mark Sykes, great goal, lovely assist. He's been contributing pretty much every game for Bristol City. Someone to maybe keep your eye on this season.
Go on then, Sam. Tell me how much you loved Andre Dizel's goal. When the ball ripples across the net like that, I think there's few sweeter sights.
It's nice. I think it's his first goal for the club. So wants to be shooting more often, doesn't he? I thought Jack Colbeck's finish was really well controlled as well. That's so easy to get wrong. It's a difficult finish that as well, but it's perfectly drilled in. I think they rode their luck a little bit. I think Middlesbrough missed chances, but there's drastic improvement at QPR. So onwards and upwards. Plymouth, I think, big win. Worth mentioning because it had been a difficult few weeks for them. I enjoyed the wayward finishing at Elland Road. One from Callum Patterson to win it. He's actually wheeled off like he scored. And Ruter, wasn't it? One-on-one and just had to just loft it over the goalkeeper and he got nothing on it.
It's the feeblest lob ever, wasn't it?
Oh, I felt so sorry for him. So that was quite amusing as well. And yeah, tweet us if anyone knows the answer to this. Why is Freddie Ladapo, when he's been at Ipswich for nearly, what, 2-3 seasons now, he's still putting his fingers in his ears when he notches a brace? I mean, I was getting pelters for the 6 months that I played at Ipswich and I never lowered myself to that level. I hate that. Clarkie, what do you think?
Don't like it. No, I don't like it. What about, would you ever point to your name on the back of your shirt?
No, I would never. That? Listen, maybe I'm contradicting myself a little bit because I didn't act perfectly when I was a tractor boy because I remember giving a few supporters a little bit of stick when I was getting booed and what have you, but just enjoy scoring a goal.
Yeah.
Matty Godden's been doing it this year as well. I don't know if you noticed that. And I actually saw a little bit of traction on social media, a little bit of supporters disdain at that, you know, disappointed in him. Can't he just celebrate now? And he actually celebrated properly the last couple of goals. So maybe that message has got through. I just don't like it. That's it. It comes with the job. You're going to get stick. Don't stick your fingers in your ears.
Yeah, it's not hygienic either, is it? They say never put anything.
He's probably not even doing that, is he? Someone tweet us if he's doing something else. Maybe he's just like loves an AirPod or something, and he's just mirroring that or something. You know what I mean?
Ladapo, you know, Ladapo. I keep hearing different pronunciations. There's a random one on the radio. I mean, it's Ladapo, isn't it?
It's got always good. My money.
Okay.
His second goal was funny as well, wasn't it? Just got walloped in his grid from a yard. Take that.
Maybe he'll celebrate when he gets a beauty. We'll keep an eye on that one. That's it for the Championship for a couple of weeks then, though. League One takes centre stage next weekend, and next for us. Right, hands up if you tip Port Vale to struggle this season. My hand is up, listener. What a fool I am. Vale win 2-1 at Oxford on Saturday to mean they're one of four teams on 13 points at the top of League One. Mad last half hour here, Clarkie. Oxford had two men sent off, and Alfie Devine's match-winning penalty came in the 9th minute of stoppage time.
Yeah, some result of this, because Oxford have been flying, we know that. And proper coupon buster. But maybe we shouldn't have seen it that way, because since they got spanked 7-0 at Barnsley, they've won every game, haven't they, Port Vale? They've been very, very good. So, yeah, full credit to them, because it would have been easy to cave in after that nightmare start, but they've regrouped well. The red card, yeah, well, I mean, one of them was off camera, wasn't it? No one seems absolutely sure what happened, the Mark Harris one. Apparently it was a stamp. That's what I've heard. So yeah, that was the game changer. The story of the game was young Alfie Devine, on loan from Tottenham Hotspur, comes off the bench, and he produces just a gorgeous free kick, beautiful in-swinger for Iacovetti. I've butchered that name.
Iacovetti
to head in. So that was brilliant in itself. And then they win the penalty. Ben Garrity, who'd come on at halftime, who was really influential, he was excellent, breaks into the box, gets pulled down. And all three of the names on Port Vale's penalty taker list were off the pitch. So it's
divine
literally
intervention then.
Yeah, exactly. So Devine intervened and said, yeah, I'll have it. And he's only 19, remember, he's on loan, doesn't really know the lads that well. And it's to win the game, isn't it, effectively? And he sticks it in very, very confidently. So clearly a real strong personality, Alfie Devine. But yeah, as for Port Vale, very well organised. Again, it's a bit of a theme this week, the teams I've covered, not had much of the ball, but they're very well organised and hard to break down and efficient at the other end. The key to this game, I think, was a slight tactical change. Wilson came off up front, Garrity came on, and the message at halftime, they pushed Massey up into the forward area, and the message at halftime was, come on, boys, we need more of the ball. Let's get hold of it. Let's play a bit ourselves. Let's not just be lambs to the slaughter against this talented Oxford side, obviously managed by Liam Manning, who knows how to manoeuvre the ball around with his team. So they said, no, let's take a bit of a grip ourselves. And it worked. And they got, obviously, two big moments towards the end of the game to win it. The other red card was from Greg Lee, second yellow. He scored the equaliser. I don't know if you clocked this, boys, but his celebration was too angry. I don't like an angry celebration either. I know we sound like celebration police today, don't we? Which is shocking, because I hate the celebration police, Sam, but you've got me going now. He scored the goal and he's almost like shoving people away. I'm too angry to really enjoy the moment. Literally 90 seconds later, steams in, maybe still his heart still pounding. Steams in on someone, picks up a second yellow, and he's gone. Immature. You got to be a little bit calmer.
Yeah, but we're campaigning for joyous celebrations. There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah,
we want people to express themselves, enjoy the beautiful game. Yeah. You know, don't vent your spleen. Yeah. Or, you know what I mean? Or have a go at people.
Yeah,
and you
know, you're
never,
right.
You're never going to trump to Murray Ketch Bayer, are you, with an angry celebration? He won it in the 90s. So, yeah, you're always going to be second fiddle.
Maybe he wasn't angry, but he just looked hyper. It was a weird celebration. And then, yeah, I just thought, calm down, mate, calm down. And he obviously didn't calm down and got himself a red. So there you go. But well played, Port Vale. I think this is as high as they'll get. I can't see them sticking around at the top for the duration. But yeah, it's been really good for them the last few weeks.
Yeah, no doubt. Alfie Devine's a great signing for them. Sam tipped him up last season. I saw him play for Spurs under 21s and he was the best player on the pitch by a mile. There were loads of shocks this weekend. I'm not sure that Stevenage winning 3-0 at Orient was even in the top 10, but it pricked my ears. Borough continuing their fine start to life in League One with local lad Nick Freeman putting the cherry on top of the cake.
His ball forward. Has caused a few troubles here. And that is a fabulous strike. Some goal from Nick Freeman.
A great goal, that. His first in almost a year. A familiar pattern here, Sam, to a lot of the games across the league. One team has way less possession, but more shots on goal and wins the game. Have you got a theory as to why Stevenage have adapted better to life in League One than Orient so far? We've already got 9 more points than them.
Well, I've seen Orient and I was really impressed with them. So I don't know. I think this has been a type of game that they even struggled with last season. Haven't got the games in front of me, but I think against the likes of Northampton, Stevenage, of course, it was a little bit of an issue. And we saw that again at the weekend. And it was interesting seeing Richie Wellens, who gives brilliant interviews. There's no one more honest after a game. I think the fans really appreciate that. Maybe not after losing 3-0 at home, but he basically said, I've got the team wrong and I should have put more giants in there. But namely, probably Beckles, and who's had a bit of a difficult start to the season, and Piggott, probably likewise, actually, because not been amongst the goals. But those two did come on early second half. That might have counteracted a little bit Stevenage's game plan. First couple of goals, as you would expect from Stevenage, balls in, bit of commotion. Sweeney gets himself a goal. The third one, as you said, it is from a knockdown, so it's played forward. And the midfield player joining in, and Freeman gets a wonderful strike, kisses the underside of the crossbar. But just a job well done, really, from Stevenage. Really compact in the middle. Allowed Archibald and Roberts to have it really in the wide positions for Orient, but they couldn't make hay. Two really good players at the level. I think Archibald at 25 has probably got another jump in him. I think he's a really talented young boy. I remember we used to speak about him when he was at Macclesfield, quite fresh out of Celtic's academy. So they've got good players, Orient. Goal scoring a little bit of an issue, but the worst defence in the division currently. Conceded 11. Stevenage only conceded 3. So there's a big contrast there. And I looked at Stevenage's setup and I thought, you know, what are they doing anything differently? And I said, no, Nathan Thompson's in the middle of a back three. That's sensible. Nathan's an excellent footballer. Maybe he's having a bit of the ball. He had 25 touches and I don't think he came off. So I don't think Stevenage have changed their setup, but Nathan Thompson is a good one-on-one defender. He does give you a bit of composure, but this is just a brilliantly well-drilled team. This could be the best squad, one of the best squads that Stevenage have had since Clarkie was there. I'm telling you. I rate this team. I rate this squad. And I'm working with Steve Evans on Thursday.
Are you? Okay.
So there you go.
Okay. Good luck with that. No, it's probably the best squad in Stevenage's history. It's pretty much the top position that they've ever managed. So yeah, now I'm buzzing for them, buzzing for the supporters. They haven't changed, Sam, what they've done. And I like this because he's recruited players from the high level, like Thompson, like Butler, got the boy on loan, is it from Man United, McNeil up front. Players, better players he brought in, but they're buying into the Stevenage system under Steve Evans. So they're technically better, probably more likely to finish and convert chances, these guys, but they're not changing the style. Their pass accuracy this season is 52.2%. So almost half of their passes are inaccurate. They've had the fewest short passes. They've got the lowest share of possession. They play a lot of long balls, but they're just good at what they do. And 4 clean sheets from 6, if you keep that up, imagine if they get 8 clean sheets from 12, they'll be right up there. So let's see. Very, very good team.
All right, we look forward to Sam giving us the inside track on the Steve Evans methodology next week, maybe. Let's whip through a couple of League Two games. Not a great week for Harrogate Town. Smashed 8-0 by Blackburn in the Cup. They then followed that by losing 1-0 at home to Barrow on Saturday. And they missed a penalty with a pretty rubbish effort from Jack Muldoon. But Barrow, Sam, only lost once in the league all season. Are you wild for Pete?
I'm not wild for his fist pumps. His fist pumps, left-handed, unorthodox. You seen them?
No.
Yeah, proper celebration.
I liked your impression of it, though. I wish we, maybe we'll put this out on video.
It just looks, probably down the Greg Lee route, looks quite aggressive. Yeah, it's interesting. Have a look later on. Great goal in this game to win it. Kean Spence, this is someone maybe having a little scouting report on in a future week, out of Middlesbrough's academy, been in non-league, Halifax and Scarborough, 2 goals, 2 assists already. And the 2 goals, both winners. So I think he's been a big reason for their early season success. Absolute peach, this 25 yards on the angle, right-footed, flies past the keeper. I think they owe a debt of gratitude to Paul Farman in goal. Saved. There's a feature in this. The worst penalty I've ever seen in my life from Jack Muldoon. Yeah, really bad. He put a little bit of disguise on it. I'm going to contradict myself here, but Paul Farman just read it. Like it was a really, and he went nowhere near the corner, didn't have any pace on it. It was pretty bad from Muldoon, who's obviously a very reliable goal scorer for them normally. But yeah, Farmer made a couple of big saves first half. And the front line of Barrow, Emil Ekwa, who I remember flashing up from his time at Southend, where I saw him in like a Football League trophy game, and he had something like decent awareness, decent hold up player, hardly scored any goals for the Shrimpers, ended up at Maidenhead, I think. So he scored 3 already this season. Jamie Proctor obviously had a really good spell coming towards the tail end of his career, but at Port Vale. And the lad from Crawley, whose name escapes me, help me out, Dom Telford, in the hole in this game. So he got all 3 Pete Wild in the lineup here, which I think is pretty mouthwatering from a Barrow point of view. Defensively, they're strong, they're physical. Yeah, they've got a chance, I think, this season. So excited to see how they go. 4 away games in the next 6 for them now, so we'll have a better idea after that. And they've got to stop giving penalties away as well. 3rd pen of the season. So, room to work. But, yeah, I've been ever so impressed with them start to the season.
What did Harrogate do with Luke Armstrong? He's there. He's at Wrexham. He's about to sign a mega bucks deal because you know it's going to be. He was going to get a proper rise there, and the paperwork. He thinks he's joined them, and the paperwork wasn't filed in time, so he's sent back. He's still a Harrogate player.
Yeah,
that's tough, isn't it? Tough for him. Tough for Harrogate. How'd you get over that?
Yeah, I mean, I've only scored 4 goals. Nobody scored fewer. But they did move, didn't they, on deadline day or the day before, Josh March from Stevenage and Jeremy Sivi from Middlesbrough. So he's brought in 2 front men probably to counter losing Armstrong, but he's very good at that level. He's probably their best player, physical. I don't know, his old man's Alan Armstrong, isn't it? So maybe he's a good influence and he can get him to knuckle down until January at least, score a few goals and that move will come. But it's difficult because obviously, you know, when the dough's being dangled there, the opportunity of getting a bumper contract, you're always a bit concerned about injuries, loss of form. He's got to contend with all that now, and he's pivotal to Harrogate and Simon Weaver, I suppose, escaping a little bit of criticism because that's probably going to come his way due to the start of their season.
Yeah, luckily for him, his dad's the chairman, so his job is one of the safest in football. Finally, Faller review the weekend. It's off the glamorous Crewe, where the Railwaymen put on a first-class performance against an MK Dons team whose defence went on strike for the last half hour of this one. 3-1 to the home side. It finished after Dons had led early on. Difficult to get a handle on Crewe, Clarkie. Only their 2nd win, but they've only lost once in 90 minutes. They show good spirit to come back here.
Yeah, they got goals in them, that is for sure. Score loads and loads of goals, particularly at home. And look, MK Dons came there as sort of, I don't know if they were leaders. Were they leaders? They were certainly in the top 2 or 3. And look, they had 7 shots on target against MK Dons. It was, yeah, some good goals in there. Shiloh Tracy came off the bench and was really good for Crewe Alexandra, really tormented MK. So, yeah, I think that they'll be fine. There was a little change of system from Lee Bell, who hasn't been in charge that long, I guess, but he's doing all right. I think he switched from a back 3 to 4-2-3-1 after about half an hour of the game. And
he ring just the changes?
changed. He banged the changes. Yeah, you're right. That's exactly what Lee Bell did. So, yeah, he tactically nailed this one. MK Dons are a funny team, aren't they? They've obviously got so much talent, particularly up top with Issa and Lecco scoring great goals. I was looking at their numbers. I mean, this is MK Dons, who have been known for possession football in recent years. They're ranked 21st for possession at the moment this season in the division, 21 out of 24, averaging under 45%. And they're not creating very many. They're in open play. Their XG is about four, just over four goals. They've scored 10. So basically, the reason they're where they are is because the guys that have been scoring the goals have been producing some special moments. And I think we can remember quite a few of them already. So as high as they are in the table, I wouldn't get too carried away by MK Dons. They need to maybe create a little bit more and certainly tighten up against teams like Crewe, because if you've got aspirations to go up automatically, then this is the sort of fixture you go away and you sort of deal with it. And they didn't, MK, so they'll be frustrated.
All right, that's going to do it for the weekend review. It won't have escaped your attention, listener, that the transfer window closed at the end of last week. So I have asked the chaps to do a little transfer/scouting report mashup, and we'll get into that next. Right, Adrian and Sam have both picked three players who they think have made notable new moves. We'll go one at a time. Adrian, we'll start with you and Jaden Philogene.
Yeah, Philogene has rocked up at Hull City. Now, I watched quite a few of Villa's pre-season games. Don't ask me why. It has to do for work purposes. But Philogene was excellent in the tour of America when they played in this summer series. He was pretty much their standout player in two or three of the games. So very direct, runs with the ball and likes a shot. Yeah, he'll fire them off, and he can create chances too. He's got power, pace, and a little bit of guile as well. You remember him from Cardiff last season. He only scored four goals and made one assist, but he was better than that. He was, in a lot of the games, Cardiff stand out by a mile. And I think he really enhanced his reputation there. I'm a little bit surprised that Villa have let him go, but they have made some good money. I think Hull have paid about £5 million for him. He can play left or right wing, maybe number 10 as well. And when you look at Hull, you've got Tufan, who didn't play at the weekend, but he's started the season great. You've got Liam Delap up front or wide right. You've got Scott Twine in there. And now you've got Jaden Philogene as well. You've got Connolly that's involved. Estupinan, who scored quite a few goals. They've got quite a lot at the top end of the pitch now, Hull City. And a lot of the guys are young, improving players as well. So, yeah, I think Philogene at the KCOM might do pretty well.
Well, I'll just come in there because I'm just going to put this to both of you. I don't want to sway your answers, right? I read this last week. At the last minute, Southampton came in for Philogene. All right, and there was a delay to him signing the contract. I'm saying that Villa till January there. What are you doing? I have swayed you. Sorry.
Yeah. It's a massive temptation, isn't it? Because you know Southampton have got much better chance of reaching the Premier League than Hull City. Yeah. I mean, look, maybe he's got a conscience. Yeah, maybe he's got a conscience. Or maybe Liam Rossini is persuasive, yeah, kind of guy. You know,
he's given your word. It's hard to go back on it, isn't it? I suppose if you're up there, but still, like, I'm surprised with you, Clarkie, because I saw him a little bit last year. I saw him score very early on. I think Cardiff, Birmingham, scored the winner. And then he was good in pre-season, the Chelsea game. I think it was Chelsea. But surprised he's been allowed to move. But I thought that was interesting because of, yeah, I wanted to be in his shoes.
Maybe he just didn't fancy the journey from Hull to Southampton. Sam, your first pick. Lewis O'Brien has gone to Middlesbrough from Forest on loan. He had that horrible situation, didn't he, in January where Blackburn didn't get their paperwork in time and he ended up going to play for Wayne Rooney at DC United for a bit instead after being left out of Forest squads. It's been a really rotten start to the season for Middlesbrough. Is O'Brien going to give them that bit of championship now so that maybe they've been lacking?
Yeah, I think it's a really good signing. I think it's in a position that they were short. I think that's been evident in the opening few games. I think they've got different profiles of midfielders, some really good players in there. Obviously, Hackney, in terms of his little bits of movement, the way he can get out of little tight spaces, is really good. Barlas is obviously a lovely passer of the ball. Howson's probably been doing the dogged defensive duties, but yeah, getting on a little bit. So I think he strengthens them no end in that department. You remember how much of a pivotal part of Carlos Corberan's Huddersfield he was, deployed in all manner of roles. I think that's a great asset as well, the flexibility that he brings. He can play different positions. He can get you a goal. He can assist. And he's pretty much fit for every game. I think he featured in 43 of the 46, just missed the first couple for Huddersfield that year and was left out prior to the playoffs. So, yeah, real fit boy. He was one of the best players in the Championship a few seasons ago. I see that as a real, real steal for Middlesbrough.
Clark, if your second pick, earlier today we talked about Leicester's lack of firepower. So they've gone old school and bought a cannon in.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, 5-year deal. They reckon it's about £7.5 million that they've invested in Tom Cannon. Obviously, Southampton went for Ross Stewart, Leeds went for Joel Perreault. They had to go for someone, I think. Obviously, they lost Patson Daka on loan. Kept Iheanacho, which I think is really good for their promotion prospects. But yeah, so I think it's a smart pickup. And I think that Everton are daft for letting him go. He's 20, Tom Cannon. He's 20, had a loan spell last season at Preston, who weren't exactly the most attacking side in the world and got 8 in his last 13 games. Everton are dreadful up front. And, you know, I look at someone like Eddie Nketiah. You know, I know he's not world, but he's in the England squad now. He's coming into his own, coming towards his mid-20s. Not every striker has to be sensational at 18, 19, even 20. I think they've sold him too soon. And I think he could be someone that proves Sean Dyche and the Toffees wrong. Great movement. We talked about him last year. I did a scouting report on him. I just love the way he plays off the shoulder of the last defender, always looking to run in beyond. And in those positions, he's pretty clinical. He can score off both feet. He's quite calm and accomplished in those moments that matter. He'll get offside a bit because he chances his arm. But yeah, I think he's a decent hold-up player, but probably better just spinning into space where he can finish. So yeah, look, it'll complement. You know, he'll be back. He won't play every week. You've got Vardy and Iheanacho there, but he'll be a good option, I think, for Enzo Maresca. And there's a very strong possibility if he shines, you know, be worth double that in 12 months' time.
If you're a Premier League chairman, owner, money man, send your striker to Preston if you want to balance your books. Archer, last season, went into Preston, season before, sorry, bagged a load of goals. Middlesbrough took him, 11 million or whatever Sheffield United have parted for him. And now Cannon did exactly the same. And penny for the thoughts of all the Preston supporters, because I think all summer, last summer, they waited for Nathan Archer, whenever it was. There was a period last year when they were just desperate for Archer to get him over the line. He went to Middlesbrough. And again this summer, Ryan Lowe's been saying, he's the one we want. We're waiting for him. He's the one. 2 days before the end of the window, he gets flogged as well for massive money. So they're doing a good job as a feeder club anyway.
While we're talking front men, Sam, you've gone for Mason Burstow, someone you and I have seen a bit of this season. He's joined Sunderland on loan from Chelsea. Have you liked what you've seen?
I was going to go for Admiral Musquay just for you, Matt, who's gone to Exeter from Luton, which I think will be a good capture. Obviously, Premier League player at the moment. So,
Admiral Nersey, always good.
There we go. Yeah, he should do well. He should do well, and they're short in the centre forward position. But yeah, Burstow, I just think, yeah, fascinating really to see how he goes. You never can really imagine how it's going to go when you've only seen them really in PL2. He got his goal for Chelsea's first team in the pre-season against Dortmund. Really well taken header. Didn't do particularly well against AFC Wimbledon, but that was partly due to how well they were defensively set up. It was difficult to feed any balls into him, no space behind. He cut a bit of a frustrating figure. So in terms of his mobility, his skill set is quite similar to that of Ross Stewart. So as a direct replacement, I can see that because he's pretty quick when he gets going. He'll play on the shoulder, not brilliant to feet. I would say that's probably the area that he needs to improve. And I think that's probably been highlighted during his minutes in Chelsea's first team. But that does come sometimes with age, with experience, understanding the position, how to, you know, back into centre-halves, feel them and become a real asset for the team in that regard. So he will improve, I'm sure, knowing now that he's going to be playing first team football or certainly getting minutes. And Sunderland desperate need probably of that type of player. Great goal scoring form back end of last season. Can score all manner of different goals, running onto things. Obviously a good physical size as well for balls into the box, which Sunderland will probably do with their tricky wide players. So yeah, you know, more intrigued than overly confident that this is going to be one that's immediately going to yield goals. But he desperately needs this loan. And going to keep a close eye on him.
Yeah, and if you are a Sunderland fan, I would advise you to have a look at the short documentary that Chelsea made on Mason Burstow last week, because he's had a really difficult upbringing and an interesting route into football. It speaks a lot to his character that he's been able to get as far as he has.
It probably gets lost as well, Matt. I think he's got 6 goals for Charlton's first team. So, you know, this isn't his first taste of first team football. He's done it a few times already, you know, kind of burst onto the scene at the Valley. So we'll see how he goes.
Best by name, best by nature. Arthur Okonkwo is your last one, Adrian. I assumed that you'd picked him because he was on loan from Arsenal, but then I looked that he's gone to Wrexham. So he's the Ben Foster replacement, is he?
Looks like it, yeah. And I think it's quite a good coup from Wrexham, because this is a guy that was on loan, first of all, at Crewe, where he did brilliantly, and they loved him at Gresty Road. It was a really successful loan spell. He's 6'6". He's absolutely massive. Short sleeves, confident boy, quite a dominant goalkeeper. Obviously, dominant for his age. So he went from Crewe to Sturm Graz. Now, Sturm Graz were in the Champions League qualifiers just a few weeks ago. They won the Austrian Cup last season with Okonkwo in goal. Look, the Austrian Cup, you know, they're playing teams like RB Salzburg and stuff. So he's playing at a pretty high level. And again, they loved him over there in Austria. So he's someone that's got a growing reputation. He was actually, and this is a great stat, Arthur Okonkwo last season was one of only 6 keepers aged 21 or under to be playing regular football in the top 10 European leagues. It's so rare for anyone 21 or under to be a first team keeper. Yet he's had that over the last couple of seasons with these loan moves. So he's ready for Wrexham. I think he'll be able to handle the spotlight and the big crowds there, because he's been playing for a decent club over in Austria. And yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing him develop and improve, because he's clearly got potential. When he played for Arsenal's first team in pre-season, it didn't go great for him. Got to be honest, he made a few mistakes, which is probably why he's now out on loan at various clubs. But I think there's something there with him, and I think Wrexham fans will like watching him play.
All right. Well, there's a low need to finish as well for you too, right, Sam? A Scotland international who's made his way to Millwall.
Yeah, if Luke O'Neill was the most likely Championship player to save a dog, and Martin Waghorn was the most likely Championship player, is he in the Championship now? No, League One player to serve an ace, then Alan Campbell was the most likely Championship player to join Millwall. Right, Clarkey?
Yeah, I'm hearing you.
Fits the bill.
He's a workmanlike.
Gets around, dogged. I think sometimes you see what a signing can be from the reaction of the parent club that he has left. And I think the Luton fans are feeling a little bit sore about this. And I think it's right to say that his form has tailed off a little bit under Rob Edwards. He hasn't been the force in the last 6 months or so. But yeah, as a ball winner, a ball carrier, get you up the pitch, incredible energy, can get you a goal. He got 7 Championship goals for Luton, which isn't a bad return from someone I would associate with doing the ugly side of the game. He's got a penchant for pinging one in as well every now and again. So,
penchant, I like it.
I don't know. I think Mill will always need a bit more of a controlled midfielder, like someone who's comfortable on the ball, who can take the sting out of games when they're ahead. I've been calling that for months and years on end, it feels, but that's probably not going to happen overnight. That's probably a change within the club that may be going to happen over a few transfer windows. So going into this Millwall squad right now, with the improved wingbacks, the improved options up top, with Nisbet now hitting a bit of form, if it is going to be the Millwall of the last few seasons, I think this is a really good signing. I like the business that Millwall have done. I'll be fascinated. I'll be astonished if Millwall are in trouble this season. I think this is a new and improved Millwall squad. Not one I don't think that's going to get in the playoffs necessarily, but I think this is another good signing, and one that should, yeah, prove the doubt was wrong.
Well, we'll keep an eye on all 6 of those players as the season goes on and tell you how they got on. We're nearly at the end of this week's pod, but of course we've got a tweet of the week. You've probably seen this already, listener. It's not so much about the copy as it is about the pictures. It comes from at Carlisle United, at official CUFC, to give them their proper moniker. Champagne emoji, spaghetti emoji, a well-deserved at Vesta Wealth man of the match, and post-match pasta from St. Nicholas Arms for Callum Guy today. Heart eyes emoji, hashtag CUFC. There are 2 pictures. One is of a representative from Vesta Wealth, half-heartedly shaking Callum Guy's hand, who looks chuffed, to be fair. He's about to get what looks like a half bottle of champagne.
It's the smallest bottle of champagne you've ever seen for a man in the match, isn't it?
It is minuscule. And it's given by a man with rips in the knees of his jeans at his age, ought to know better than that. But that is not what has caused the internet to go into meltdown here. Callum Guy is pictured eating pasta out of a foil container with his bare hands. Now, I want to give him the benefit of the doubt here, Sam, and say that the photographer said to him, "We don't have any cutlery. Can you just put your hands in that big pot of hot pasta?" But what on earth is going on here?
Nah, the photographer hasn't said that. Just hold it up like a trophy then. You know what I mean? Just show the contents. Yeah, he's made a rash decision there, isn't he, on the spot. Stuck his mitts in, and it shouldn't pay off. It's awful etiquette. There's only one type of pasta, shape of pasta that you can eat with your hands, and that's the field pasta, the leftovers from the kids, right? If there's a few tortellinis on the side, I'm going in with my fingers there. Most days, actually, I do that. Most days. Even better if there's a few...
Yeah, just pick off the scraps, don't you? Yeah.
A few drippings of butter on it.
You don't dip all four... Well, you got all four fingers, and I assume a thumb, which is out of shot. It's going into lasagna. I mean, lasagna that I'm assuming it's cooked. If it's cooked, his fingers are getting scorched there, aren't they?
Yeah, that's it. It's either a lukewarm pasta dish or he was at Colchester at Carlisle Hospital Burns Unit.
I feel like I've been served up a pasta at Carlisle. It feels like you might get ushered into a bar. Do you know what I mean? I can see the inner confines of that ground. It's quite like Kenilworth Road-esque, isn't it, Clarkie? There's quite a few like little nooks and crannies. I think I've been ushered in for like the tray of pasta. Or maybe they've always done it.
Just animals, aren't they, up in Cumbria? It's, can't eat them with their hands. Shocking.
And the replies are worth a look. Aaron says, "Can't be scranning pasta with your hands," which got 213 likes. And Saintly simply says, "No forks given," which I enjoyed very much. Clarkie, are we going to have to put up a picture of, I don't know, me with my face in a bowl of spaghetti or something on Instagram?
I'm always up for that. I'm keen on that. If you want to oblige, let's do it. At EFL Watner on X, and at What the EFL on Instagram and TikTok. So look out for pasta pics moving forwards.
Go give us a follow on those social media platforms if you like. We can't guarantee that we will have pasta picks, but you never know. We are right at the edge of the curve with this kind of thing. So you never know. You look. Give us a nice review on iTunes or Spotify as well, if you'd be so kind. That'd be nice. That really helps other EFL fans find us. And before we go, another mention for the offer from our friends at Quinbet. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer. You can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It is for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotion. Or use the link provided in the description of this podcast. It's 18 plus, and remember, always gamble responsibly. Right then, next week we'll be focusing on Leagues 1 and 2. Do join us for that if you can. Until then, many thanks to Adrian and to Sam and to you for your company. We'll catch up with you again soon. Have a good week.